This podcast is a Radio Mike original production. Head to radiomike.com.au to find out more. Oh, hello everyone. Welcome to Mike Talks, the sometimes Friday bonus edition of my podcast that I sometimes do when I sometimes have time. At the moment, I do have time and I'm so excited about my guest on Mike Talks this week. I am so bloody excited. His name is Alex Moses, and he is the lead singer of an Australian punk rock band called Columbus. They have just released their newest single, Temporary Summer. Have a listen to this. It is an absolute pop punk banger. You're taking me out of my head and underneath the ocean. We're out breathing, and if I'm choking, yeah, shining like a diamond. Where I'm safe, fucked up on an island. I have been a huge fan of the band Columbus for a very long time. I particularly love their debut album from 2016, Spring Forever, which is an incredible pop-punk album. If you like music like me, like Blink-182, Green Day, Fall Out Boy, any kind of pop-punk, even a little bit heavier, like post-hardcore music, like I used to be really into A Day to Remember, and Silverstein, and a bunch of other really cool punk bands like that. Alex Moses, he is the mastermind and the main writer behind Columbus, and I started chatting to Alex on TikTok because he has a TikTok account, and I just said, hey man, I'd love to talk to you on my podcast. I love your music, and I'd love to just talk music and pop punk and punk rock music with you and how you write music. This is a really interesting chat where Alex talks a lot about what it's like to be an artist in 2021. Like, what is it like to be a musician in 2021? The landscape for music has been changing so much over the past two decades, the same way that the landscape for content creators like me has been changing. So I definitely felt a lot of similarities there. Of course, if you like Mike Talks and you want to help me have more time to do them, head to patreon.com/radiomike for as little as a dollar a month. You can help me pay the bills and find the time to do this stuff. As little as a dollar a month, patreon.com/radiomike. It really helps out. And on this exact same feed, you can check out a bunch more Mike Talks episodes. I have done episodes with comedian Ruben Solo, Ryan Shelton from Rove and Hamish and Andy and his own Ryan 11 project, Broden Kelly from Auntie Donna, Luke and Lewis from the Luke and Lewis Show, Adam and Simon from Gogglebox. They are all there. I would love for you to check a few out. Leave a review for the podcast. Support me on Patreon. Subscribe to the YouTube. I am so excited for you guys to hear this amazing chat with Alex Moses. He was such a legend, and I had such a great time talking to him. So enjoy this chat. All right. Welcome to Mike Talks. I am Radio Mike, and I am joined by someone who is honestly, I think, one of the coolest and most accomplished musicians in Australia. His name is Alex Moses. He is the frontman and lead singer for what I would describe personally as Australia's best pop punk band, with so a bunch of music that has been super inspirational to me. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
No worries, Mike. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the intro, although I don't totally agree.
Who would you describe as Australia's best punk band?
Oh, geez. Oh, I don't know. Like, I mean, I love pop punk, and I like the reason why we started a pop punk band was because of all the other pop punk bands in Australia at the time. And I guess 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago when we started this band, that those kinds of bands were like The Getaway Plan and The Living End and Friends Will Rom and bands who played, like, I guess, poppy punk music. And then now it's like the genre's totally changed a lot, and there's heaps of other bands doing lots of different things. I don't really know what the best is. It's all subjective, but there's a lot of good bands out there right now, a lot better than mine. But I'm glad to be a part of this scene and to have, like, contributed to it in some way, and like, and watch it grow, I guess, which is really cool, just to go to shows and play music.
Well, before we get into talking about your music, which I want to do, when you jumped on the webcam, because we're recording this over Zoom, I noticed you, I actually could only see you from kind of like belly button up, or maybe a bit higher, right?
Yeah.
And it just kind of looks like you were waddling from side to side. And then I realized, I actually thought, oh, he must be like on a treadmill, and he's going to do this entire podcast from a treadmill. So you are currently walking. Is there a chance we will get into a brisk jog, or are you just going to keep the pace?
I think I'm going to keep a slow pace. This particular treadmill, it slides under my desk. I've got like a standing desk. It's been good because I'm a fidgety person, so it helps me like focus, I feel like. But it does go a bit faster, but it's a bit sketchy when it goes faster. It doesn't have a handle or anything, so I probably won't break out into a jog.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough, man. Let's just keep it low key. No need to get our heart rate.
I don't need to break a sweat. Yeah, let's keep this easy.
Okay, so I guess like can you take me back to the start, and like I don't really know too much about you or like your band Columbus, but I'd love for you to just walk me through how Columbus began and what's your background with music that led you to starting a punk band from Brisbane.
Wow. Oh, that's a good big question. So I mean, I've always liked music. And Daniel, who drums in Columbus, we met in grade two. And so we were living in Sydney, and we both moved to Queensland at the same time, not knowing each other, ended up going to the same school. And we became very good friends. And then we both kind of got into music at the same time. And I started playing guitar and Daniel started playing drums. So we started jamming around. And after high school ended, we started a band. We started Columbus. It was hard to play gigs. But I don't know if you're a musician. I can see a guitar in the back of your Zoom.
I have released one EP of comedy punk music.
That's sick.
In a band called Release the Sounds. But it's nowhere near the level of production quality that you've.
I'm sure it's dope. I'll check it out.
Cool.
Yeah, so we started a band. So before you're 18, we found it was really hard to get gigs. We were trying to get gigs before we were adults, and it was really difficult. Bars will like let you in, and then you play, and then you have to leave or whatever. So we just really wanted to play rock music. Like I said, we loved bands like The Living End and Friends of Rom, The Getaway Plan. And then we also loved like those huge bands that we all grew up with, like Blink-182, Good Charlotte, you know, Green Day. Those kind of quintessential bands that when like in the early thousands, when like rock music was like on the radio, and it was like, I remember all the kids at school loved Jet and all the kids loved Green Day, and we'd have school dances and kids would pick the music and Jet would be on there. And it's like, wow, imagine that. Like, so we just loved rock music and, we wanted to play, and we kind of grew up, our parents encouraged us to do music. And we eventually got into playing rock, and then we started Columbus when we were about 18 because we just wanted to play shows. We did the talent thing at school, you know, you have those little talent competitions. So we did a few of those. And after school, we started playing gigs. And I remember my dad got us a gig at some sort of like, my dad was a drummer. He's a drummer, not a professional drummer, just as a hobby. And he had some friends who ran like a rehearsal space, and I played in a band called Novocaine with Daniel and one other friend.
Was that inspired? Can I ask? Was that inspired by the Green Day song "Give Me Novocaine"?
I think it was.
Or were you just a fiend for Novocaine?
Oh, I was hooked on the stuff. Anyway, so I was 13, and we we got this gig through my dad at this. It was kind of like a rehearsal space that put on shows, and. It was sick. We played to like, we got all our friends, we sold little pre-sale tickets and stuff. And that was awesome. And that got us hooked when we were at high school. So when we left school, we started playing some gigs, local shows around the place. And I remember our first official Columbus show was in Brisbane. We played to two people, my dad and the sound guy. Oh, and maybe one friend. So like three people max. And, we covered Aqua's Barbie Girl. But a punky version.
Like those old Punk Goes Pop records. Do you remember those Punk Goes Pop
yeah.
Records?
Kind of like that, but way shit.
Yeah, okay.
Am I allowed to swear on the podcast, Mike? I'm sorry if
Man,
I swore.
Man, you can say every possible swear word you want.
Yeah, and we were terrible, and we even broke a low E bass string, which never happens. And that was our first show.
It is usually the high E string that breaks. The low one is notoriously difficult to break because it's so thick. So yeah. Well done.
So it wasn't a good show, but I think we were hooked. And from there, we've not improved, but we have done more shows.
So I think it was about, and I hope you don't mind me telling my story of getting into your music, but I, similar to you, and I reckon we're probably around about the same age. So I'm 26. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 27. So about the same thing.
Yeah. So similar to you, I was so into all of the American pop punk bands, particularly Green Day and Blink-182 and, like, you know, Sum 41. And like, they were like my bread and butter growing up. I was obsessed. And I remember, like, I never really found anything Australian growing up that was of the same kind of level as that. And then in 2016, I listened to Triple J a lot, and it used to be my alarm clock in the morning. So probably go off at 7 a.m. And one morning, whoever it was on breakfast on Triple J at the time, I think it was still Matt and Alex at the time.
Okay.
Or maybe it was Ben and Liam. And your song, Say What You Want.
Say What You Want.
Which is just, for anyone who hasn't heard it, that song at 7 a.m. in the morning is an absolute belter. Like, it's not really the song you want to wake up to.
I don't know why they played it. I don't know who, who allowed that to happen.
But, you know, I just remember waking up and hearing this song and being like, what is, like, who is this? This feels like exactly what I've been looking for in music. Like, this is the gap that I've been wanting for so long.
That's and dope.
I like, it's such a banger of a song. I think that's probably my favorite song from Columbus. And I just sort of fell in love with it from there. And I then delved into your debut album, Spring Forever. And I always say, like, sometimes in life you hear a song or an album that just, like, completely connects with you and your position in life at that time. And I don't know, Alex, I think me and you might have been going through some really similar shit around that time, because I listened to this album and I was like, this is, like, literally me. And I went on a trip to Japan with my mates, and I was skiing in this place called Hakuba, and I had my headphones in, and the whole time I was listening to Spring Forever.
That's dope. You were skiing with music, listening to music?
Yeah, I was going... I mean, I was only on the beginner slope, so we're not going too far.
Yeah, but in your head, it's like a video game. Like, you're skiing down the thing, listening to...
And, like, this... It just, like, totally helped me get through, like... I basically went through this breakup, and, like, for years after this breakup, I was just still in love with this girl that I broke up with, and I couldn't move on from it. And then your album, just listening to it, completely just helped me to, like, progress to another stage of my life. So I need to thank you for that. And I'm just curious, like, Spring Forever does feel like a breakup album, and it's like, it's equal parts angry and really sad and heartfelt. Like, there's this song called Nervous Wreck, which I really love that song. It's so beautiful and so painful, and you sing it so well. So can I ask, like, what was going through your head and what was going on in your life when you were writing that album?
Yeah, sure. Oh, look, honestly, I'm stoked that you connected with it. It's a funny thing, like, you, and I'm sure everyone has a different experience if you like writing songs, but sometimes you just write songs about your life, and if other people connect with them, that's so cool. And at the time, so Spring Forever just hit 5 years old the other day. So this was 5 years ago, but I can't
believe it's been that long, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I know.
Time has just flown.
It's moved so fast. And it's cool to have, to do a record and, like, kind of have it turn five, and people have moved on in their lives from that point. It's cool. And I have too. And back then, I guess I was an angrier kid. Like, I was angstier, and I think I was going through a hard time. I was in a relationship that was kind of ending, And I think I was also in a weird place mentally. I mean, in your early 20s, there's so much confusing stuff going on with like love and relationships. And then like, what are you doing with your life? And then like, and stuff. And being in a band doesn't really offer too much security.
Yeah, man. I was doing community radio at this point in my life. So I completely feel you about this. It just spoke to me on this like just confusion. I was like, what am I doing? Like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? And every song on the album just, again, spoke to me so much.
I don't know what was going on for us. Like, I think we were all in the same, a similar space, and doing that record was, I mean, it's kind of corny to say, but it was helpful to write in that sense. And like, looking back at it now, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if I could write another song just like that again, because I'm a different person. But I'm like really happy that I had that ability to learn like at that time, you know, because I'm definitely a lot happier now than I was back then. But I'm like, you know, every person, you have to learn through your shit, you know, like unless you like have those experiences, you like probably can't grow from them. You know what I mean? So looking back on it, it was kind of like some of the songs still make me sad almost to listen to, because it like, it's a reflection of like my earlier self and like what I was feeling at that time, which is like not always super good, but I'm glad that I could channel it and into music that other people sometimes enjoyed. Other people surely turned off the radio at 7 a.m. What the fuck is this? Shut up. I'm trying to drink my coffee. But you know, and it was fun to play, and we just wanted to make fast, angry rock music. Like that's what we wanted to make. And I hope that we did an okay job.
Well, one of the things that I think is so cool about you, and obviously you like Blink, so you definitely know the song Damn It by Blink-182, right? Iconic breakup song. And I feel like in that song, Mark Hoppus's vocals are so angry, and they kind of just sound, maybe it's in the mix, but they just sound a little bit different to me than anything that came afterwards in Blink from Mark. I've never heard that aggression in his voice since. And then that whole, your whole album, Spring Forever, I feel like, I don't know if it was intentional, but to me, you sound like how Mark Hoppus sounded in the song Damn It. And you've got such this, you've actually got this incredible versatile vocal range where you can do some really aggressive, like not screaming, but like angry singing. And then suddenly like you're just back into this like floaty, calm kind of sentimental light vocals. And I think those dynamics in the songwriting are so impressive to me, and they really add complexities to the songs. And I mean, I'm going to assume it's all intentional.
I think so. I mean, back then I also, it's a funny story about Spring Forever, like with the singing and stuff too, like, you know, a lot of those American bands, like say Tidal Fight and Polar Bear Club and stuff, were bands that we also really loved. And they had pretty like heavy vocals, like singing, but yelly singing. And we love that stuff too. So that's kind of what I wanted to sing like. And when we did Spring Forever, when we were recording, I lost my voice the whole time. We had to, it took like 3 weeks or so to do the album, or 19 days. And I was, after about a week of recording, we started doing vocals, and I just lost my voice straight away. So I was on complete vocal rest when we were recording. So like I would go to the studio and I wouldn't talk until it was time to sing. And after singing, I wouldn't talk. We'd go home and have dinner. We were staying with a friend. I wouldn't say a word the whole night. I wouldn't say anything to anybody. Go back to the studio. I would only talk in the studio where I had to, and then sing, because I didn't really know how to sing. Not like that anyway. And maybe there's no healthy way to make sounds like that either. But it was fucked. Like, and when we did our second record, because I didn't do as much of that stuff, I didn't have the same voice problems. And I think I'm getting better at it now. But back then, I think I just yelled until it hurt, and then I kind of kept yelling.
Did you always know that you had, like how do you find out you can sing like that? Because like your singing is so cool, man. Like it's so the emotion you convey in your voice is so like amazing. And I'm curious when you find out, hey, I can sing angry and it sounds good. Like, were you always singing as a kid?
Nah, I don't think so. I started playing guitar quite young, and I started writing songs when I was about 11 or 12. So I started singing then, but I was never a singer. And at school talent competitions, I actually used to write songs with a vocal and then get someone else to sing them. I'd play guitar. And at the end, when Columbus was starting, we didn't have anyone else who was going to sing. No one else was better than anybody else. I was as bad a singer as the rest of the people in the band. It's kind of like how that Beatles story about Ringo being the worst drummer in the band. Yeah, it's like that. So I was playing guitar. I was like, I'll sing or whatever. And I didn't really know how. I think that by the time we did Spring Forever, we'd already put out kind of like, we did a demo and then an EP and then another EP and then another EP. And then the third EP was Home Remedy, which like went okay. And then that kind of got us into the ability to do an album. But by then it took me like a couple of EPs to learn, if that makes sense. So I was always singing, I guess, but it was like a slow, gradual improvement. And also just like pissing my parents off, probably. You don't know if you can scream until you scream, you know? And you don't know you can yell until you yell. So you just got to yell. You got to give it a go.
So I'm one of those people that analyzes popular culture to excess if I like it. And
I think you do it really well. It's quite funny, actually.
Oh, cool, man. I wanted to ask you, I've wanted to ask you literally for 5 years, so I'm glad we're finally here. On the album Spring Forever, throughout the album actually starts, I'm pretty sure the first track is a song called Summer Dress. That's the opening track.
That's correct.
In the album, every single season is mentioned throughout. So it starts with Summer Dress. There's a song called Daffodil, and I think the lyrics are, if you're a daffodil, then I'm the snow in the winter. Of course, the album's called Spring Forever, and the lyric in that song, which is the final song, is what you said in autumn can still hurt me in the summer. So can you speak, maybe it's me analyzing it too much, but is there some kind of story behind the use of seasons as imagery in that album? Because it definitely spoke to me, but I'm just curious if that was intentional from you.
It was intentional in the sense is it's like a thematic idea. I guess how do I explain it? It's kind of like a theme idea to me, like the seasons have feelings, right? And they have like this idea where like winter in Melbourne, you know, you live in Melbourne, like you go outside and it becomes winter and it's dark and it's cold. And it's automatically kind of emo around the place. Like there's a feeling to that. And I grew up in Queensland, and in summer in Queensland, it's like this relaxed, happy environment a lot of the time. So I kind of wanted to convey the feelings through the seasons a little bit. And then on top of that, I was in a really long relationship as well. And I think in my brain, it was kind of over a period of time, because I was quite young and I didn't know what was good and bad about a relationship. I think I like it. Well, it kind of went on too long. And I think I kind of wanted to say something about how I saw the seasons pass while it was ending, about like how long that took. And I think it was something. Yeah, I guess that was kind of the idea. Like the thing you said, an autumn kills to cancel hurt me in the summer, is like this is how long it's gone on. It's like something that's happening in one season still happening in another, and that's like 4 months apart. And that was kind of the idea.
I think you succeeded so much, at least for me, like again just conveying the sense of time moving and like, you know, not to get too philosophical, but yeah, like it's quite reflective, and you paint pictures so well with your lyrics, like especially Daffodil, like, you know, you're a daffodil and I'm the snow in the winter. Like that's such a, a great painting, and it's a great metaphor and a great analogy. And yeah, man, like I have just like spent so much time analyzing the lyrics of that album. And before I spoke to you last night and today, I was just like driving into work and stuff. And I just, you know, I admittedly haven't listened to Spring Forever for a while. Like occasionally the songs pop up on shuffle, of course, but
yeah,
haven't listened to it as a conceptual album for a while. But every song, like, I just knew all the words, and I'm just singing in the car trying to match your vocals, and like just love it so much. Was that a self-produced album, or did you have someone produce it for you?
Oh, so we produced that with in a studio in Sydney, and we did it with Jay Maas, who he engineered it. I guess all the songwriting was all us. We kind of like wrote the songs. I kind of wrote like acoustic versions, and I'd do rough demos with drums and bass and stuff, and then we'd jam them out and change parts. And when we did that album, or both the records we've done, we kind of like rented out a rehearsal room for kind of like 2 weeks before recording and just full-time practiced. So we get all the parts down exactly the way we want them. And then we went to the studio with Jay, and Jay's done like, he'd done like Title Fight and Counterparts. He was in the band Defeater, which is like his claim to fame, that hardcore band. And he's done a lot of great, he's done work with bands like Transit and heaps of other stuff now. He's a great engineer and producer, and mix. He can do everything. And he did such a good job producing us and getting good sounds out of everything and kind of turning our ideas into a cohesive record, I think. So we work with him for about 3 weeks or so, and he's just a cool, I was stressed out at the time, you know, because it's stressful when you make a record, especially your first one, because costs a lot of money to do it and feel like the stakes are really high. And we were only in there for a limited period of time because you're a small band. Like the studio's got bookings coming up. Like you've got to get it done and your budget's going to run out. So it was stressful, but he was chill, cool as a cucumber. And that really helped me, I think. I'm not sure about everyone else in the band, but that really helped me like just focus on what we needed to do and play the music and get stuff done. And a lot of the songs, like Nervous Wreck's a good example. That song, we wanted to have an acoustic song on the record. I had some ideas of the song written, and I hadn't written like the chorus and something else. And we were in the studio, and in the morning before we recorded the song, I like finished writing it. At our mate's place in Sydney, we were staying there, and I finished writing it like that morning. And then we were like, how are we going to record it? And I think we just did it in like one take with like a guitar and a vocal. Because I wanted this song, but I just didn't have the parts for it. And I feel like I probably needed the deadline. I couldn't finish it until it was like, it's time to go, mate. Like, we can finish the song.
And so, because that is like, there's another kind of acoustic-y song, like Some Address starts kind of acoustic-y as well, or at least like it's very stripped down, but then it sort of explodes into this huge finale before leading into the second track on the album. And yeah, it's such a well-crafted album. And I know you've got new music out, so I don't want to just talk about your first album for the whole time. but I did want to share with you how much I love it, because it's so good. And I've loved all your music since, and you've just released a new single, which I really like, Temporary Summer, which again, it does feel like you have come such a long way from that Spring Forever era, because even in your second album, the music does feel like a little bit more poppy and a little bit just like happier. Like it definitely isn't as aggressive anymore. So tell me about Temporary Summer, and is that going to be, is there a third album coming?
There's not a third album recorded at the moment. I want to do a third record. We've got more songs coming, but it's not a third album at the moment.
Okay.
That probably is due to COVID. I wouldn't say that. We all live in different states, Columbus at the moment. Three different states, three different people. So over the last 2 years, like, unfortunately, it's put the whole pandemic stuff has put a bit of a, for every band, but it definitely meant that we couldn't really get together. So we managed to pull together some time to record some songs. I wish it was a record, but It's been a good chance to slowly dip our feet back into the water. And Temporary Summer, I wrote at the end of 2020. I feel like I wrote it at the end of 2020. And then we recorded it in April this year. And we had to delay putting it out because of all the virus stuff. Just seemed like a big waste to put it out when we couldn't like do other things, organize photos and all that kind of other stuff you got to do. And I guess I kind of wanted it to feel, I don't know, more aggressive. It's funny thing, like after we did our first record, I feel like the second record is happier, but then I spent the last kind of 2 years in lockdown in Melbourne, and I'm sure you did as well. Were you here the whole time?
Yeah. I was in Melbourne the whole time. So is what you're saying that you've gone Bo Burnham, you know, you went along, you did a Bo Burnham inside writing session.
I got definitely a lot more bummed out the last 2 years than I have in a while. So I think the songs we've got coming are probably sadder than the stuff that we've written previously. And that's probably just the nature of the situation. I'm definitely less angry than I used to be. But I'm glad of that because even if, I don't know, I love playing angry music, but I'm going to leave that to the 19-year-olds now. I'll leave that for the 19-year-olds. I'm too old for angry music now.
Yeah, you're happy now, you know? You've lived your angry life. You're moving on. On that note, though, what... Okay, so I'm a creative, in inverted commas, in the sense that, like, I make podcasts and I, you know, think I'm funny, so I try to do funny content and shit like that. But like I still work like a day job in my field. Like I still help people make podcasts and that's how I make most of my money. Like I don't make that much money off, my own stuff. So I'm curious with you as a musician and creative, like what is it like being a musician in 2021? Like what do you, I don't know. Like I'm just curious as to like, are you writing every day or are you working on songs for other people? Like what do you do?
Oh, it's a cool landscape. I mean, much like you said yourself, like if you're a creative, I feel like you've got to be doing a lot of different stuff, especially if you want to make an income. I'm not a full-time musician financially. I'd love to be. That is a goal of mine. I'm also a paralegal part-time.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So you've got a law degree.
I do have a law degree.
So you were touring in your punk band while getting a law degree from university.
That is correct.
That's incredible. Well, I love that.
I didn't get great grades, but I used to print out my notes and kind of study in the back of the van and stuff. And I did defer a lot. I had a few periods off uni, maybe a year there, 6 months there. But over 7 years or so, I did finish my degree. And then I'm not a lawyer yet. I guess I could be one, but I don't really want to be a full-time lawyer. I'd love to do music with most of my time because I just love it so much. And I guess coming back to your original question, so I have another part-time job, and that's what a lot of musicians probably have. Most of my friends in bands have part-time jobs alongside their music jobs, just especially the last 2 years because the income's dried up. And for myself, I do write every day. Like creative output's so important. Like if you're a songwriter, just like working on your craft, and you probably love it, so you want to do it every day. And then on top of that, I also do record other bands and do songwriting sessions with other artists. And then I'll like do demos for Columbus or my own music. And I don't know, like obviously go to shows and network and stuff like that. But most of my time, I love the creative aspect of being in a band more than like the music industry side of that. That part stresses me out sometimes. I'm much more of like, I'd rather spend my time writing music, producing demos, working with bands, songwriting. And then, you know, you have to do some video content, other things like that. But I don't dislike that stuff if it's music related, you know, like making videos of me recording something. So that takes up a lot of time as well. But it's something I do love to do. So you got to be, I guess I'm pretty, you like to be diverse. You got to do a bunch of different stuff.
And so when you guys were getting a bunch of Triple J airtime, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And because you guys, I'm pretty sure you got, did you open for Jet at one point and a few other pretty big bands?
Oh, I haven't played with Jet. We've done some bigger bands. The biggest tour we did was the Yumi at Six tour, I think. That's the biggest tour.
Nice. Cool.
In 2016. That was fucking sick. So
I guess when you start getting airtime and suddenly these opportunities to play with, you know, other bands like Yumi at Six, really big American, I think, pop.
They're
band,
UK, right? Like actually, I think.
Oh, UK.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad.
Sorry. Oh, but same thing. They're huge band.
Yeah. So like what's going through your mind as this like emerging musician who's suddenly getting noticed by your peers and asked to play big shows? And like, could you have ever imagined that? Could you have ever dreamt that?
Nah. Yeah. I think even doing a record was something that was like finishing an album and actually having it in the shop or at JB Hi-Fi or whatever. Just the idea of that was just the craziest thing when I was like a teenager or when the band started. I didn't even think that would ever happen. And you know, you do it. And you're just like, fuck, that was really cool. And when you get to do those, if you do some cool shows, you get to do a festival or whatever, like, I think that you don't really realize, I don't know, I guess, like, you can't comprehend it before you get some opportunities. And then when you get them, I guess you just, we enjoyed doing it so much. I just can't even express how much we enjoyed some of those things. Like touring, or if we got to do a cool festival, it was just like, some of those memories are just like the best things that I've ever done in my whole life, for sure. And I don't know if it gets better than that sometimes. Like, we've not played to that many people compared to most other bands. But like, some shows, I feel like in my brain, in my subjective experience, were just like, oh, the best time ever. So like, I know it's hard to explain, but I'm super grateful for getting some of those opportunities. And like, I know, I'm grateful for that, and I'm also happy I like followed it through. I feel like a lot of times, I played guitar in my room, and I know that most people in a band like just grew up playing music, and they could have at any point pulled the plug on that. And there's lots of reasons to pull the plug. There's so many.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I didn't. I'm really glad we didn't, and we just kept doing it, and doing it because we love playing the songs. And out of that, we got to do some cool stuff, which is great. And then some of the best stuff isn't even doing cool tours or like, you know, playing a cool festival. It's just like playing music with your friends all the time, or like working on an album and then putting it out. Like, anyone can do it. It just costs money, and it just depends how much of your personal life you want to sacrifice. But anyone can do it. Even nowadays, without a label, it's so much cheaper to record than it used to be. But like, if you want to do it, everyone should just do it, because it's sick. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, because I did the little album that I did with, I did it with one of my mates, Jack, and we were recording with this guy called Yuri, and he's done a bunch of TV comedy music.
Yeah, sick.
Like, he's like the guy in the TV industry to do music. So we hooked up with him to do it. And I totally agree with you. Like, some of those days, like, we were just doing it for fun as like a little side project, but those days where we went into Yuri's home studio and were just like singing stupid songs and crafting songs and like being like, I'm sure you do it in much more detail to us, but like, oh,
probably
we
less
do this. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're like, oh, what about this like little guitar lick or this little harmony here? And yeah, you're right, it is so much fun to just be working on music and collaborating on music with friends. And I think that's great. You also have like your solo project, which is Alex Moses. And you've got, currently there's three singles up on Spotify. My favorite of which is Keep In Touch, which I think is the most recent. Is that your most recent single?
That's the oldest one, actually.
Oh, that's the oldest. Oh, okay. I love it.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. I think that it's the most, like, I haven't put many solo songs out. I just, like, kind of write songs sometimes that don't fit Columbus, and I want to, like, put them out, I guess. So that's why I started doing it.
We'll keep in touch, whatever that means. We'll keep in touch, whatever that means. We'll keep in touch, whatever that means.
And I've got more now that I'm like ready to put out, but I think that I've like, Keep in Touch, I thought would be a Columbus song because like it kind of suits a little bit. But then I thought it was too, too story-esque to really suit. It just suited being a slower, like a acoustic song, not like a loud rock song. But yeah, I just been doing that. It's kind of a bit of fun, you know? It's kind of like the thing I just like to... I'd love to put out music even if no one listened to it. It'd just be good to... It's kind of fun to just do it and put it out there and then just leave it. If someone likes it, that's cool.
Because you have an incredibly underrated TikTok account. Your handle is Alex Moses Music?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so everyone go and give it a follow. Scroll down to the very first video, which is actually where... I think this is how I originally got in touch with you, because I saw this video and I thought it was really clever and hilarious, which is basically you essentially take the tropes of what a song from the Shrek soundtrack sounds like and you're like, here's how to make a song from the Shrek soundtrack, and it's like you've nailed it. It does sound like a song that is straight off the Shrek soundtrack.
Hey everyone, today I'm going to show you how to write a song for the Shrek soundtrack. Let's fucking go.
I always really like that. And then the next one you did was... A stereotypical pop song by someone like Kesha. And what do you remember? What it's, is it Turn Up the Lit or like,
yeah, something? It's something like that. I think it's I think it's called Lit on You was like the idea.
Yeah, so I love those, and I'm gonna ask you to please keep doing stuff like that, because I think they're so clever, and I reckon there's like a market for them. But like, you know, what pops into your mind to make you be like, I want to pick apart the Shrek soundtrack and make a fake song for the Shrek soundtrack?
I don't know. I think that sometimes I'll write a song that sounds a lot like somebody else's song, but it isn't their song. It's like, it's just kind of following those tropes. And I think with the Shrek one, it's actually funny. I was listening to, I think it was another podcast, and they were talking about how Smash Mouth's All Star became the intro song for Shrek. But there was another song that was queued up to be that before Smash Mouth. And it was by a band called Self. And the song is called Stay Home. And it sounds a lot like All Star. It's the very similar styles of song. And I think Self, Stay Home did end up on the Shrek soundtrack on the CD. But it's not on Spotify, but you'll find it on YouTube. And if you go and listen to Stay Home by Self, it's very similar to All Star. It's got this vibe about it. And I wrote a song in my brain that sounded like that song, but it also kind of sounded like All Star. And I don't know why. I just had this... I think I was playing around on my little keyboard with this organ sound. And I played that, like, kind of the riff that became the start of that song. And I think it's because I'd been listening to this Stay Home Self song. And... yeah. And I just like came up with this idea, and I thought it'd be fun to like make a video out of it. And I'm glad. It's funny because I haven't done many since. I've only done three, I think, of this kind of thing.
I know, I've been waiting for a man. That's why I followed you.
It's because they're so time consuming. I have to write the song.
Yeah, I bet.
And then I record all the bits and film it. And I think that I got a bit disheartened because the last one I put out was How to Write a Song Like Kelly Clarkson. And I wrote this song and I thought it was pretty funny. But it only got like 1,000 views. And I was like, fuck, like it's kind of dumb. Not like I care how many views I get, but there was a point I do enjoy doing it. But because I've got like songs to write for my band and other things I feel like I should do, it just felt like I didn't have the encouragement to sink the 20 hours into making the minute TikTok video.
I totally
But maybe
it's
I should.
So disheartening. Well, I just think, I reckon if you consistently did stuff like that, I reckon you could be huge. Like, I just think even the Shrek one, you capture so much, not just of Smash Mouth, but there's another band that does a lot of music across the entire Shrek franchise called The Eels. Do you know
yeah,
The Eels?
Yeah, I love The Eels, yeah.
Yeah, same. And you, even it, you capture like the best parts of Smash Mouth and The Eels in this song, and it's so good, man. So everyone should go and follow Alex on TikTok and check out a bunch of his videos. Before we wrap up, and I'm really grateful that you've given me a bunch of your time this afternoon, man.
All right, thanks for having me, Mike. This has been heaps of fun.
Cool. Well, I usually end with this question, which is, now that I think about it, it's actually four questions. So I'm sucked in. But
it's okay.
What is, just like in your own taste, what is one album, movie, book, and if you're inclined, video game that you think everybody should experience in their lifetime?
All right. Okay, let's go. Album first. This is a really good question, and I'm trying to think of like, I've been listening to lots of different albums recently. I think that one of, Okay, so I'm going to come back to album because I like music. It's very hard to pick a favorite. Movie, I've been rewatching the Scream franchise recently. I just think that first, like the whole franchise, but especially the first Scream movie. I'm not a massive horror fanatic, but the combination of comedy and horror, I know most people have seen Scream, but oh my God, it's just fantastic.
Scream is so good because it tries to poke fun of like conventions of horror films while still being a horror film.
And being like, so meta in itself. I don't know.
Yeah. No, great choice, man. Really iconic film. Love that.
So I love that. I just love that. Book. Jeez, I haven't read that much recently. Because, I don't know. I used to read a lot. I feel like I should be
You can skip. You can
skip. Be more well-read on the top of my brain. I think it's because I used to write, I don't know, I used to write a lot of songs instead of reading books. But then, like, I don't know, when I was in law school, I had to read so much I never liked reading.
Yeah, your favorite book is, like, Legal Studies 101.
Honestly, The Criminal Justice System in Queensland is probably the book I've read the most in my whole life.
Okay.
What was the last one? Video game.
Video game.
Video game. Okay, so recently I've only been playing, so I have an Xbox 360, which I've been playing Skyrim on a lot recently. I do like, I'm not a massive gamer, but I do like those open world kind of, it's pretty basic. But then I also, my partner Katie bought a Switch, and I bought the remastered Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2.
Love it.
Oh my God. So, and it's got the new soundtrack on there, so it's got like Alex Leahy and Baker Boy and stuff. And if anyone is a Tony Hawk's fan and they haven't played it yet, or if they have a Switch, geez, it's worth the money. It's so good. It's insane.
It's a great game. It
looks so good as well. It just looks outstanding.
And it's so cool on the Switch because you can just, you know, you can play it wherever.
Yeah. And it looks so good on the TV too. Oh, geez. It's insane.
Great choice.
Yeah.
Great choice.
Now, with records, I reckon, like, I can either be, like, lame or, I don't know. I guess my favorite record when I was growing up was Kaplunk by Green Day, which is Green Day's second record. I think it's because it was one of the first I bought on CD. And I listened to it so much in my car, the CD got stuck in my car. I had this old 1996 Mazda.
Yeah,
and you know when I feel like it had melted in there and it wouldn't come out.
Did it still play though, or was the music all jarred and like fuzzy?
It started to skip at the very end of the CD. They have a My Generation cover by The Who, and it started to skip by the time it would hit The Who cover. But the rest of the CD was pretty good. So I listened to it so much.
What are some of your favorite tracks off that?
Okay, so the first song I think is 2,000 Light Years Away, which they still play every now and again, and like,
yeah,
that's a great song. There's another song on there called Only of You, which is a really good song. And then there's another one called Android, and Android's like, it's just really emo for Green Day because it's so early. I've never heard Billy Joe talk about stuff the same way he talks about it in that song. And I think that when I bought the CD, I was probably the same, similar age as when they put it out. And okay, I just connected with it so much. Yeah. And there's some songs on there that aren't that great. Like, they're just, they're pretty good. Not
do
amazing.
You know the song, do you know the song No One Knows?
From yeah, album? Yeah. It's like acoustic, it's doo-doo-dee-doo-doo-dee kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. I reckon that's a really underrated Green Day song from that album. And as well as that, I'm pretty sure Welcome to Paradise is on that album in like a... Is it that one that Welcome to Paradise is on in some like demo-ish kind of form before it was re-released on Dookie?
You're correct. It's like a... I think they intended to put it out on Kerplunk. They obviously wrote it for that album. And then I don't know what happened, but I imagine that they probably, when they came to doing Dookie, Kerplunk, like Dookie was probably on a bigger label, I reckon. Like, I don't know this, but I'd assume they got to a bigger label. A lot of people hadn't heard Kerplunk, and Dookie was coming out, and Welcome to Paradise was such a good song that you might as well just re-record it. That's probably what they did. But I like both versions. I mean, the Dookie one slaps, like, realistically. Dookie's
great. I've never heard someone say that, like, Kerplunk is... Like, that is a great album. I do think people listening to this, listen to Green Day's Kerplunk, because I think it'll really show you how far that band went. You know, because a lot of people know them either from the Dookie era or probably more our age group from the American Idiot era.
Yeah.
And I think listening to Kerplunk will show you... just, you know, the development of that band over 10 to 20 years. So great choice.
I think like backups to that for me would be like Green Day and Blink were my favorite albums when I was growing up. So I think my favorite band. So I think that Kerplunk, but my favorite Green Day album is still Dookie. And then my favorite Blink album is still Enema of the State. And I feel like they're like my favorite albums from both those artists. But then like Kerplunk means a lot to me that Dookie doesn't, even though I know it's not as good.
Yeah. Well, Enema of the State is such a great summer album, don't you reckon? Like,
yeah,
every time I'm in the car and it's like a really hot day in Melbourne and the sun is shining, I just want to listen to Enema of the State because the guitars are so like bright and the vocals are so upbeat. So yeah, really good choice. I honestly, man, I'd love to catch up again and just chat our favorite pop punk albums at some point if you're keen, because I love talking about this stuff. But if talking about great albums, Spring Forever by Columbus is what I think pop punk should sound like in the 21st century. It is an amazing album. Go and listen to that. Go and listen to Columbus on Spotify, Alex Moses on Spotify, TikTok, Alex Moses Music. And is there anything else you want to plug before we wrap up?
Nah, not really. I'm so thankful for having me, Mike. This has been heaps of fun. It's been good to talk about the band and pop punk and Blink-182 and stuff. Go check out Columbus's new song, Temporary Summer, and watch my TikTok videos so I get encouragement to make more stupid TikTok videos.
Thank you so much, Alex Moses. This was awesome. Awesome to meet you and chat to you, man.
Cheers, Mike. Thank you so much.
This podcast was a Radio Mike original production. Head to radiomike.com.au to check out all our other content, stay up to date at radio.mike on Instagram, and get in touch, radiomikepod@gmail.com.